Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. If you've been watching the Ken Burns documentary on American country music, you know how tunes begat other tunes, how lyrics get added or subtracted, and how every new generation discovers the old songs anew. Well, it's the same with any folk music. The music we're hearing now is klezmer, the music of the Jews of Central and Eastern Europe performed at weddings and other gatherings in the 19th and early 20th centuries. The two world wars changed things dramatically, of course, but the music never truly died out. There has been a rebirth of interest and scholarship over the past 30 years or so, and the group we're hearing now, Voretsky Pass, has been at the forefront of bringing the old songs to new audiences. They'll play a concert at St. John's on the Lake tonight, but first, they join me in Studio C. We have Voretsky Pass along with clarinetist Joel Rubin in Lake Effect's performance studio. Thank you, lady and gentlemen. I really appreciate that very much. And so, Cookie, let's start with you, and let's go around and introduce yourselves and what you play.
I'm Cookie Siegelstein, and I play violin.
And I'm Josh Horowitz, and I play a 19th century button accordion.
I play a borrowed bass. My name is Stu Broutman. It's a fine bass. We're so proud to have it.
It's a lovely bass. It's got
really
an extension
is.
On it, too.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Guys, it sounds amazing. And I'm Joel Rubin, and I play the clarinet. And it goes doodle-doodle-doodle-dat.
That's what it does.
It does. It does. So tell me about this piece we just heard.
It's a processional, actually.
Okay.
You might think of it as a processional. Very common to have processionals in three. And it's called Wexler's Jacques, because the informant, the person who played it in the original recording, was named Wexler. It was from a family, I think, named Wexler.
And was this Belarus? Was it Ukraine? Do we know?
You know, the melodies that we're playing were collected in both places. I can't tell you off the top of my head.
I think this one was Mogilev, I think, wasn't it?
Well, that would be Belarus.
That would be Belarus, yeah. Most of the things from the Magid collection that we're playing are from northern Ukraine and Belarus, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is the title not Suderhope, which would indicate
no,
that it's a processional, or is that
one.
The other one? We get them mixed up because there's only a few different titles, and then they get switched around with the names of the musicians and so forth. So one is Wexler's Jacques, and the other one is Heifetz's Jacques or whatever.
Right.
The Jacques is
actually,
the thing.
Actually, this
the
is, guess what?
That's just the rhythm. Well, it's the rhythm.
This is Wexler's Tuderchuppe.
It is Tuderchuppe.
Oh, yeah, the Jacques is the one in G.
So Tuderchuppe means it's the processional to the wedding canopy.
Right.
Okay.
Naming of these tunes is its own science.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned a name, and this is part of why you're here and what you're performing, Magid. And she was, Sophia Magid was the person who collected a lot of these. I was thinking as I was doing some research on this that it's sort of the Belarus and the Ukraine's answer to Alan Lomax, going out and getting these songs and snippets of tunes onto wax cylinders. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of there were several collectors at that time. She was one of them. And what was interesting to us is, first of all, that although her focus was Jewish revolutionary ballads, I don't think we have any of those. But I had not heard any of these recordings. And I think Joel had a USB stick with them on while we were touring with our previous project that we had done with Joel, which was Polish music, Polish and Jewish. So to be able to go back in time and find, it's kind of like musical genealogy. And so much was lost during World War II that it's really everything we find is a jewel.
Yeah, so this stuff was collected in the 20s and the 30s. And I guess I first heard about it about 25 years ago. And there's an ethnomusicologist originally from Minsk who lives in New York City now, and he had worked a little bit with these materials. And so it was sort of floating around. And then about 10 years ago, it got published. Maybe not even to me. It was only 8 years ago. I don't remember exactly, but by the University of Potsdam. 2008. So 10 years ago, or 11 years ago now, by the University of Potsdam in Germany. And those were the sound files then that we were working with, because the book that was published came with a DVD.
Were these during the war? Who had them?
Oh, they've been sitting in the Pushkin House in
St. Petersburg
all these years.
Right.
It was no mystery. I don't think they were ever considered to have been lost.
Okay.
They'd just been there.
Right.
Just nobody did anything with it.
It was always hard to get access to these recordings. And we went to the Ukraine to the Vernadsky Library, where a lot of these things are held. And you could look at them, but you couldn't copy them. And, you know, you couldn't even copy the manuscripts or – and then we didn't have cell phones. This is back 20 years ago. So it was hard to get at them.
So what changed? What finally allowed access to them?
Money.
Ah, they needed
the university, because I was involved in writing the grant, actually, originally, that enabled them to get the money from the Volkswagen Foundation, enabled them to cut a deal with the – I don't know what the university is in St. Petersburg to make digital copies of the original cylinders, and then they had a research project that then published this book, and there's some transcriptions, and there's a, you know, the song texts and all of that stuff.
And the list of informants
there's not very much information, but at least
right.
We have the name of the people,
the date
it was recorded, and the place in most cases.
So I'm assuming this is significant. This is very historically significant in terms of music and of this particular kind of music.
Well, what's interesting is that we do a lot of historical research, and, you know, Joel and Josh are both very academically involved in historical research, but we really approach it as musicians that just want to do something with the melody. And so we do, you know, careful research, and we carefully transcribe in music notes what we are hearing. We don't take for granted the transcriptions that came with these or any of the sources that we use. And then we just do whatever we want with them. I guess for us, the fact, if you know the tradition, you know the musical tradition, and you've studied it, and you really are in there, then we really are, when it comes down to it, musicians. So we artistically then arrange them. We cut them up. We change things, we add things.
We're what's known in the trade as historically informed performance practice.
I call that applied musicology. But
right.
Yeah.
That's a good description for it. Yeah. Because you're taking it into modern performance.
Yes. Right.
So you wouldn't. Now, the things that you heard on those original wax cylinders, was it just a melody? Were there actual harmonies and things happening, or did you add all of that?
So most of it's just melody, somebody singing, sometimes a group of people singing. As far as the harmonies go, one of the great discoveries.
They're playing a violin.
They're, yeah. Right, yeah. When they're playing, right, exactly. The instrumental parts of it were, there's a family that Cookie was stunned by, because there were, I think, three string instruments playing, and they were playing a little bit of harmony and had an accompaniment style that I had not heard before.
Right. And it blew the top off my head. Because, you know, in this klezmer revival scene, we've been doing backups a certain way, kind of, you know, like that, which makes sense. But what I heard was, you know, a bass note and then thirds. And sometimes they were playing with each other in thirds.
Yeah.
And it was really exciting, you know.
But that's exactly what the Belf guy does, except the Belf's Romanian Orchestra had a second violin, but it was only two. It was one violin playing melody. And one playing what Cookie just demonstrated, essentially.
He's referring to 78 RPM recordings that were made in 1914 by this band that we love. That was just this wacko Jewish band. And they played in that
style. And nobody knows who the leader was, really. That's the exciting thing. Belf.
We assume his name was Belf, but that's all we know.
We think
it was the clarinetist, but we don't even know that much.
He got rich enough to buy a house.
Oh,
we do know that.
That's a big deal.
For a musician, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And
this is capitalism. Some record company executive decided that they were the guys and recorded close to 100 sides.
No, 86,
with this band. So they were selling thousands of these recordings for a time.
Right.
And so this guy made enough money off of royalties or off of payment or whatever to buy a house, apparently.
So there's a goal.
Right. There is a goal.
We're still working.
We have a trailer.
Yeah.
But,
okay. I have my eye on this Porsche that I've had for
That's
all you're going to have on it.
Right. Yeah. Well, what's the next song we're going to hear, and where does this fit into this collection? What's the significance of this tune?
This is a Hasidic tune, and we call it Shepetovker. Shepetovker. Nigun. Nigun is a melody without words. And this actually was something we each dug through these recordings, and we made shareable Dropbox files. Cookie's favorites, Joel's favorites, Stu's favorites. This was one of Stu's favorites. He really liked it.
It was.
And I think we switched one of the sections to make the middle section which was sung as the last section.
Oh, I don't remember. But this is actually one of the only tunes from this collection that any of us had actually ever heard
right.
before.
Right. It's kind of a...
It's not only is it another collection, but it's still popular among Hasidim today.
The Chabad
I've heard it performed at weddings.
But the version that we heard from Magid is a little bit different, too. The way
that was sung one.
It was sung, but it's different than what the Chabad Hasidim are doing now.
Now.
So that always excites us when we hear variants of tunes.
Sure.
Too.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay. Ready?
Doing this klezmer revival thing for quite a while. Why do you think people love it so much? And not just Jews. I mean, this is obviously of Jewish heritage, but there are a lot of people out there that love this stuff as part of sort of the folk revival, world folk music, people discovering things that they'd never heard before.
Yeah, they don't know any better.
Oh, stop.
I like to think if they knew our music, they would love it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just another kind of attractive dance music. Yeah. It's fun music. It's good music. Beyond scholarship or what it means to a given community, musicians like to play technically interesting tunes, tunes that have funny bowings, funny chords. It's just good music.
Right.
It's fun to play, and I think that catches on with the audience. It's fun to listen to, and it's also interesting. Like a lot of this, in fact, well, that's one of the reason why the four of us like playing together so much, I think, is because we're all attracted to these weird tunes that have like seven bar phrases and things like that. That, you know, it's not as square as, say, like
contra dance music.
Contra dance music or something where it's always, you know, two sets of eight bars or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, love about this stuff is that there is that.
It's crooked.
It's crooked. And things wait and you all of a sudden and you have to turn and.
That first piece we played actually sounded kind of normal, but if you count it out and look at how the harmonic rhythm goes, it's a little off.
Yeah. And and those are the ones that attract, I think, all of us.
Yeah. Right.
In a way.
Yeah. And, you know, you'll notice we're not playing with music stands. Okay, I mean, you know, we do when we're first learning a program, we do. But we don't make arrangements. So, I mean, we've all played together for many years in different constellations. And it doesn't always happen this way in a group that you're free with the musicians that you play with. You know, first of all, inherently trusting each other artistically. And, you know, knowing, okay, well, they're going to each work out their own tunes, and each time we go through it, it's going to be a little different. Like, I'll hear he's starting to do, if he hears me going up an octave, he'll just respond.
I heard that
and
in this last
sometimes
one, yeah.
we're trying to be so sensitive to each other that we both jump up and then we both jump down and we both jump up. I mean, there are a couple of tunes, like we know, like that first thing we played, the violin starts the melody. We know that. And we've made some arrangements that way. But what happens after the beginning is for grabs, and it's really nice. And then you get sometimes to play with other musicians and you kind of go, oh my God, I feel like I'm in such a box, you know, because with these guys it's just like,
because you got three melody instruments and his accordion is like a chameleon,
right?
So like when he plays with the fiddle, it sounds like another fiddle. When he plays with the clarinet, it sounds like another clarinet. And so like a lot of it's like a conversation. There's always It's like really three really talky people kind of blabbing at the same time. And then you'll hear it and you'll go, wait a minute, was that the violin or was it the clarinet? It gets all mixed up.
Right.
But yeah. The other thing is that's nice is that, like, if you paint yourself or play yourself into a corner, you know that it's not going to fall apart because
somebody
else is
covering
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So that's comforting, actually.
That's comforting. Yeah. Yeah. We liken it kind of to, I don't know if you've ever heard Jewish prayer in the synagogue, where people are praying the same prayer, but they're kind of not trying to be together. It's kind of like that. I mean, we're not, you know, I mean, I don't think any of us are religious, but that kind of influences the way that we approach the music, that we're playing the melody at the same time, but in all three different ways. So there's the messiness that we like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I was going to say, you remind me, watching you and listening to you, you remind me of a jazz ensemble, trading back and forth. And, you know, everyone knows the melody and kind of the basic chord structure, and then you just kind of take it.
Yeah.
And that freedom is really wonderful because it's rooted. You know, you've got the trust, and you know kind of where you're going to end up.
Right.
Right.
Well, I just love the fact that this music is continuing
right.
and it's growing and changing because it has to. Otherwise, it's a museum piece. You
right.
know, you
exactly.
want it to be living and breathing. And I wanted you to play something to take us out with that was yours. Not something from the collection, but something
right.
that, because that's part of this tradition
right.
now, too, writing new music within the tradition.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Maybe we should play the Moldavanka.
Let's do the Moldavanka. So the Moldavanka is a piece that I wrote a few years ago, and I think we originally used it for, Josh wrote an opera called Lilith the Night Demon and One Lute Act, and we used it as an instrumental.
I want to hear that.
Oh, yeah, you want to hear that.
It's online somewhere.
It is. Okay. We'll send you
the video
link.
Thank you.
I used it as an instrumental break, and so I thought it would be really good for this. You know, we'd never recorded it, and I really liked it, and what key is it in?
E minor.
Well, before you get started, I'll let you tune, but I want to thank all of you so much for taking some time to play some music for us. Welcome back to Milwaukee. I know you've been here before,
yes.
but it's great to have you back.
We love being here.
Thank you.
Thanks to Joel. And
well, one of the things also about this, not only was the repertoire unusual in terms of the fact that a lot of them were tunes we'd never heard before, but also played in different ways, like Cookie was saying about the fiddle. One of the things is that these processionals, they're super slow.
Right.
Like way slower than we ever imagined. And this tune that you wrote is actually sort of in that feeling.
Right.
It's very slow and kind of
It's kind of milky.
Stately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we've tried it all different speeds, but it just feels better a little bit slower.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So E minor, right? Okay. Here we go.
Beretsky Pass is violinist Cookie Siegelstein, accordionist Josh Horowitz, and bassist Stuart Brotman. They were joined in the studio by clarinetist Joel Rubin. The quartet will perform a free concert tonight at St. John's on the Lake on the East Side. There is more information at wuwm.com.